From the rail to your radio, this is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Here comes Bricks and Mortar, and he rushes up on the outside of United, who digs in. These two down to the wire. Bricks and Mortar, he's built like a champion.
And Beau Recall in the center of the course. Mirth by 2.5. Beau Recall on the outside of Elysia's World, but they're only battling for second as Mirth makes every pole a winning one in the Rodeo Drive.
From our Jimmy John's of Lexington studios, welcome to the Equine Forum, presented by Red Brand Fence.
Vino Rosso has taken the lead, and it's a vintage performance by Vino Rosso in the Breeders' Cup Classic.
Furlong left to run in the Oaks. It's Chauncey and the hometown favorite Late Night Powwow running her down. Chauncey and Late Night Powwow slug it out. Here's Late Night Powwow alongside of Chauncey. Noses up and down. Late Night Powwow wins it for West Virginia.
Now here's Mike Pena.
Well, for those of you who just can't wait and have a nasty case of Derby fever, I understand. I get it. Let's get this out of the way right off the bat here this morning. 147 days, 9 hours, 48 minutes, and 39 seconds until the first Saturday in May and the Run for the Roses, May 2nd of 2020, and only 24 days left here in 2019, believe it or not. And that certainly does not mean that we don't have more than a few big races still to come and potentially some divisional championships still to be decided in those big races. Going to be a fun couple of weeks here in the world of thoroughbred racing. Good morning once again, everyone. Welcome to the show that launched a network. This is the Equine Forum presented by Red Brand Fence. I, of course, am Mike Pena, Baron of the Backstretch, ready to roll for the next 2 hours on what promises to be another very busy program. You take a look at what's happening with the racing end of things today. At Aqueduct, you have 6 stakes races. 4 of those are graded, including the grade one Cigar Mile, which you talk about championship implications. You have 3-year-old Maximum Security, who figures to be the favorite in that race. He's going to look to state his case for a 3-year-old championship with a victory. There are people that are going to say, okay, wait a minute, Code of Honor, looks like he has the inside track, he beat older horses. Well, keep in mind, Maximum Security beat older horses in his last start, and now he's going to look to do it again in a race like the Grade 1 Cigar Mile, which is a pretty darn good race, top to bottom. So he'll have a case, and maybe we'll go to the front of the class and the head of that list if he can win that race later this afternoon. You have the Grade 3 Remsen with the Derby hopefuls. You have the Grade 2 Demoiselle for the 2-year-old girls. They'll take center stage in that race. And then the Grade 3 Gopher Wand for the older fillies and mares. Trainer Jeremiah Engelhardt is going to be with me later in the program. He has at least one horse entered in each of those 4 stakes races at Aqueduct later today. He'll join me in the second half of the show. Going to talk with the Big A, Anthony Stabile, who you can catch every Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday on our Red Brand radio show and on other programs throughout the week. He's going to be here with an in-depth look at each of those graded stakes races at the Big A, and you'll hear from Trainer Kieran McLaughlin, who took time to talk with the Big A on Red Brand Radio yesterday afternoon, had some great things to say about his contenders. He has 2 today in those stakes races. He has 1 in the Remsen and 1 in the Cigar Mile. So he did talk to Big A yesterday. Going to play that interview for you in the second half of the show as well. On the West Coast, the focus is on Los Alamitos and the Los Alamitos Futurity. You might as well go ahead and just name it the Bob Baffert Invitational. Bob Baffert has won the Los Al Futurity a record 11 times. Think about that. 11 times. His first in 1997 with eventual Kentucky Derby winner, Real Quiet. And most recently, he won it last year with Improbable. Bob has saddled the winner of the Los Al Futurity in each of the past 5 years. That's one hell of a streak. He has 2 horses entered today. Keep in mind, that's half the field. You heard me right. He has 2 horses entered. That's half the field. It's a four-horse field today in a race that boasts so much history. Anador, runner-up in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile, will break from the rail and figures to be, well, he'll be among the favorites. It's a four-horse field. He'll be among the favorites, but figures to be probably the most likely horse to deny Bob a 12th victory in the Los Alamitos Futurity. At Gulfstream, I told you last week, they kicked off the championship meet. Always an exciting time. And now we start to kind of get into some of the bigger events associated with that meet. And there will be bigger ones up the road. The Pegasus World Cup, the Fountain of Youth, the Holy Bull, Florida Derby. All of those still ahead over the coming months. But today, Gulfstream will once again host the Claiming Crown. And it's, I tell you every year, that this is kind of the Breeders' Cup Day for the blue-collar horses in our sport. It's a great day for those horses that don't often get to compete for this kind of money, the claiming horses, the hard-knocking blue-collar horses that we have in our sport. Tomorrow, the Clásico del Caribe will be held once again at Gulfstream. So it's a big weekend, a lot of things taking place, a lot of very unique things taking place at Gulfstream Park this weekend. This is also Pearl Harbor Day. 78 years ago, December 7th, 1941, Pearl Harbor in Hawaii was attacked by the Imperial Japanese Navy Air Service, killing 2,403 Americans and injuring nearly 1,200 others. And it was an event that, for you history buffs and for those of you who remember, would bring the United States into World War II. A day which President Franklin D. Roosevelt would declare a date which will live in infamy. And I thought it would be appropriate to remember Pearl Harbor on the program today. I'll do that in the first half of the program, right around 8:35 Eastern, when D.G. Van Cleef will join me. You might not know this, but D.G., the former president of the Breeders' Cup, chairman currently of the Virginia Racing Commission, he was also responsible for helping launch the NTRA. D.G. Van Cleef, a retired Navy officer. So I'll get a chance to visit with him coming up later in the first half of the program, and we'll reflect upon what Pearl Harbor and Pearl Harbor Day means to him as a retired Navy officer, and we'll talk about some of the positive things that are happening in the state of Virginia with that racing program. Had a chance to make the trip to Colonial Downs this past summer. So grateful to the folks at Colonial for inviting our HRN team there to broadcast the Virginia Derby. There's a resurrection, if you will, of racing and breeding and positive things taking place in the state of Virginia. So I'll talk to DG about that. Also going to ask him to share his thoughts on where we are as an industry as a whole. It's been a very challenging year, to say the least, here in 2019. We'll get DG's thoughts. He's been involved as an executive in this sport on so many levels. His family has ties back to Virginia, running a farm in Virginia. We'll talk to him all about that coming up, 8:35 Eastern time. Poll question this morning: if Maximum Security wins today's Cigar Mile, is he the three-year-old champion? Yes or no? You're going to have two choices. Pretty simple. If Maximum Security wins today's Cigar Mile, is he the three-year-old champion? It's that simple. Does a win guarantee him that victory today? You can go to at HRN on Twitter, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook. Don't forget, you can follow us on Instagram as well, Horse Racing Radio Network on Instagram. But to weigh in on the poll question, head over to at HRRN on Twitter and let me know. I'll try to update that throughout the program. If Maximum Security wins today's Cigar Mile, is he the three-year-old champion? All right, we're going to kick it off with the Big A. Anthony Stabile coming up after this first commercial break. I mentioned D.G. Van Cleef coming up at 8:35 Eastern. Steve Renfley is the president of the Iowa Thoroughbred Breeders and Owners Association. They've begun their online stallion auction. Great, great, great auction. Great event, and it benefits an industry that is doing extremely well in Iowa. Going to talk to Steve about that coming up 9 o'clock Eastern time. Again, you'll hear from Kieran, 9:20. and Jeremiah Engelhart will join me live here at 9:40 Eastern time to wrap up the program. So a lot of things to get to. The Big A is on deck. This is the Equine Forum on HRRN, presented by Red Brand Fence, manufacturing the V-Mesh and non-climb fence you see on horse farms worldwide.
Hello, I'm Eric Hamelback, CEO of the National HBPA. Thoroughbred owners and trainers know the importance of keeping their horse on schedule, on the track, and injury-free. Even a small injury can result in losing precious time and serious money. That's why farms worldwide trust KeepSafe V-Mesh Fence from Red Brand. The strong mesh design flexes on impact and reduces injuries, keeping your athletes on schedule and on the track. Learn more about KeepSafe V-Mesh Horse Fence at redbrand.com.
When it's time to paint the fences and barns, think Farm Paint. At Farm Paint, you get the industry's best coatings and paints factory direct at low, low prices. Farm Paint is your source for quality paints, roof coatings, dustless arena footings, and more. You can purchase online or drop into a Farm Paint store near you with locations in Heart of Bluegrass Country at 700 Phillips Lane in Lexington, Kentucky, Columbus, Ohio, and Sandusky, Ohio. Buy factory direct and save at farmpaint.com. That's farmpaint.com.
The National HBPA is a coalition of over 30 individual affiliates in the United States and Canada, comprised of thousands of thoroughbred owners, trainers, and breeders, committed to the positive future of thoroughbred racing while working to increase its popularity and uphold the highest standards of welfare and integrity. Stop by to visit CEO Eric Hamelback at the National HBPA headquarters in Lexington, Kentucky, and see what the HBPA is doing for you.
Airdrie Stud is proud to announce the arrival of Grade 1 winning millionaire Preservationist. The exceptionally talented son of Arch boasts Foundation mares Courtly D and Manad on the top and bottom of his blue-blooded pedigree. On the racetrack, he was one of 2019's best, taking the Grade 1 Woodward at Saratoga and Historic Suburban at Belmont Park.
And Preservationist has won the Suburban by 4.5 lengths over Catholic Boy and Pebble.
Preservationist, another exciting addition to the Airdrie Stud Stallion roster. Think about it.
Introducing new to Spendthrift's Share the Upside program for 2020. Colfront.
Colfront does it again, wiring the field in the Amsterdam.
The world-class miler retires with more than $1.8 million in earnings and owns a rare 5 graded stakes wins at 5 different distances and racetracks.
Colfront wins it for the U.S.
Now available for inspection and offered for a limited time on the Share the Upside program. Colfront. Mine your mare's potential at Spendthrift Farm, the breeder's farm.
Hi, my name is Alan Garcia.
My name is Paco Lopez.
This is Jose Lescano.
This is jockey Emma Jane Wilson, and you're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
They approach the top of the stretch, and Precisionist on the rail leads by only a head. Tallyham on the outside, second by a head. Between those two is 49er and third by a length, and Claremont there at the top of the stretch. 49er, Precisionist, Tallyham. Those three across the track, and 49er now gets the lead by a half. Precisionist now second by a neck. On the rail, Claremont is third by a half. On the outside, Tallyham and Mossop. They pass the eighth pole. Three quarters, nine flat. 49er has the lead, but Mossop is closing as they approach the wire.
Yeah, how about that look back at the inaugural Naira Mile, 1988, now named the Cigar Mile. It will be contested later this afternoon. Six horses were in that initial field. You heard the call, 49er, 6-5 favorite for Woody Stevens under jockey Billy Fox, who was replacing Lafitte Pinkai Jr. You had Precisionist in there, who was 9-5 second choice for owner-breeder Fred Hooper. Of course, the winner of the 1985 Breeders' Cup Sprint, and one other in there, Claremont, the outside horse, breaking just to the outside of 49er that year, ridden by Wesley Ward. How about that for Howie Tesher? Pretty cool stuff, and great look back at the inaugural Naira Mile. And to tell us about this year's field and all the action taking place at Aqueduct this afternoon is the Big A, Anthony Stabile, who you can catch each weekday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, on our programming here on the network. You can go to horseracingradio.net to learn more about that. Big A, good morning, my friend.
Baron, you just brought back memories to when I was an 11-year-old kid running around the Big A, getting ready for that Naira Mile back then. Jockey strike, why Billy Fox Jr. was aboard 49er that day. And, Yeah. Wow. 31 years ago. That's crazy.
Yeah. How about
Absolutely
that?
Absolutely crazy.
It's funny. I went back. I was looking for a rejoin clip to throw in there coming out of that first break. And I said, yeah, boy, this is, you know, you look at the names of the horses that have won this particular race over the years, and it's a who's who. But you start with a horse like 49er. You can't do any better than that. I was so happy that call was out there.
Yeah. 25 years ago, the second race of the streak. Cigar had won an allowance race before getting ready to take on the Narrow Mile. Devil Is Due is the favorite. Mike Smith opted to ride Devil Is Due. Jerry Bailey picked up the mount on Cigar, and the rest is history.
You do know that if Holy Bull stayed healthy, this would be named the Holy Bull Mile, right?
Knew this was coming.
Well, you brought up Cigar. I was mentioning the name of the race. You brought up the horse. So, yeah, I've got to defend my player.
Fair enough. Fair enough.
What a day.
Good card today.
Yeah,
good
great
card today.
Great card.
Good renewal of this race, yeah.
Great
I'm
card.
Looking forward to spending the day at the Big A today.
Well, and then you throw in the mandatory payout in the Empire 6, races 5 through 10, and you get a little more intrigue.
Yeah. We cover four of those races on the Weekend Stakes Preview presented by Naira Betts. Steve Grabowski and I, you can listen to that at the podcast when we wrap when you wrap the Equine Forum later. And Naira Betts is going to be tweeting a ticket out later today that I'm going to put together for them after the scratches come out. So the two maiden races that Steve and I don't go over, you'll be able to watch them on Talking Horses or get them on that tweeted out ticket. So keep an eye out for that later on.
All right, so I know you spent time talking about other races beside just the Aqueduct Stakes races taking place this weekend, but let's focus on the Big A since you're going to be there. You're going to be doing the handicapping for Naira Betts, as you mentioned. The Grade 3 Gopher Wand is the first of four graded stakes races, 1 mile on the main track. That's a one-turn mile up at Aqueduct. Only six horses, goes at 209 Eastern. Your thoughts on this particular race, Big A?
Yeah, part of the reason Naira decided to move this card back from Thanksgiving weekend to now four, or depending on how the calendar falls, 5 weeks after the Breeders' Cup, is hopefully to get some Breeders' Cup participation. And sure enough, the first graded stakes, here's Spice Perfection, who was fourth in the Breeders' Cup Filly and Mare Sprint. She won the two biggest races for her kind at Keeneland this year, the Grade 1 Madison, the Grade 2 TCA, one in the spring, one in the fall. The mile's the question mark. She has one race at a mile. She didn't run that well. She ran second, but it wasn't a very fast race. She has a mile and a 16th race on her card. She got beat by fellow Calbreds at even money. The distance is the question. The class isn't. She is the class of this race. And, you know, you're playing that Empire 6. She's a must-use. I took a little shot against her, Mike. Saguaro Rowe from Mike Stidham, who just recently won his 2,000th race, and congratulations to Mike and his team. I've been a fan of this filly since day one, and she has won 1 mile race on her card. It was the second start of her career. She was beat by a filly named Monomoy Girl. So I'm not going to hold that exactly against her. She's had a couple of breaks in her career. One was a year plus, and since she came back from that break this year, she really hasn't missed a beat. Her only two poor efforts, she chased the pace in the Princess Rooney. When I say chased, she was on a 45 and change half. She tried the all-weather up at Presque Isle for the Masters. But other than those two efforts, she's been really good this year. And I think the flat mile around the one turn is going to hit her right between the eyes. She won't be as far off as she was when she won the Pumpkin Pie, but she won't be dueling like she was in the Princess Rooney. I'll take her for the mile upset.
All right, yeah, it could be interesting and a good one to have into that Empire 6 if you're going to be playing it later this afternoon. We hope that you will be. The Grade 2 Demoiselle is the second of the four graded stakes and the first of three in succession now, races 8, 9, and 10. Race 8 is the Grade 2 Demoiselle for the two-year-old fillies, 3:13 Eastern, mile and an eighth on the main track. How'd you see that one?
One of the angles I think you want to use if you're playing this race, last year, and I had noticed in years past that even if the horses didn't win, they ran well. The young horses that have the two-turn experience, you mentioned the one-turn mile here in New York, a lot of the races, you know, Churchill Downs, you have to go a mile and a 16th to get around two turns. You're not going to see California Shippers ordinarily this time of year. So most of the horses that are running in these, the Demoiselle and the Remsen specifically, have really just run around one turn. You get a handful of horses. Last year, the Exactic paid $180 in the Demoiselle. The two fillies that ran 1-2, only two fillies that had two-turn experience. So I think that's something worth noting, especially with the fillies. I went to one of those, Alondra for Sugar McGee. He broke a maiden first time out, Saratoga, going 7 furlongs on closing weekend. Always very impressed by that. Shug once told me himself, the most impressive thing a horse can do is win going 7 furlongs first time out. And that's what his Alondra did. He thought enough to run her right into the Darley Alcibiades on opening day at Keeneland. She didn't break well. She got bothered at the start a little bit. And then more importantly, I think, she didn't really handle the racetrack. I talked to Joel Rosario, her rider, a couple of days after that when he got back to New York. He kind of corroborated that. He's like, you know, she got bothered out of there, but never really grabbed a hold of that track. And we hear that a lot about that Keeneland surface, especially with the young horses. She's come back and trained nicely. She'll get the two turns again, going a mile and an eighth. She'd buy blame out of an AP Indy mare. I don't think there's going to be any issue with the distance for her. The other favorites make some sense. Maydeen from Mark Hennig won the Tempted here at Aqueduct by a stone's throw. She was impressive. And then Bill Mott has a maiden on the outside named Lake Avenue. She's by Tappet out of the street crime ass 7th Street, who was a nice one herself. She broke our maiden going 7/8, second time out by almost 13 lengths. She takes another step forward. I think she'll be tough. Those are the three I want to focus in on. But again, Alondra got my top pick because she does have that two-turn experience.
Yeah, the two-turn experience, and did it against the eventual Breeders' Cup Juvenile Fillies winner, British Idiom, who was so impressive at Keeneland that day. Nobody was beating her that afternoon. And Alondra, as you said, if she didn't handle the track, the daughter of Claiborne Stallion Blaine could be the one to beat later on this afternoon in that Demoiselle. Race number nine.
I think she is. I think she'll take the step forward. I like the fact that Shug kind of backed off. He could have. I mean, that field for the juvenile fillies was short. She would have had plenty of room to get into that bunch. He decided to back off, give her some time, and let her mature a little bit. And knowing that Demoiselle, the grade two, a good pot for $250,000, was waiting for him, he decided to let her grow up a little bit. And I think it's going to benefit her.
He's the Big A, Anthony Stabile. I'm Mike Pena in our Jimmy Johns of Lexington broadcast studios, walking you through the greatest stakes action at Aqueduct later today. The Grade 3 Remsen is race number 9, mile and an eighth. This one for the two-year-old boys. And you had 12 in the Demoiselle. You have 9 here in the Remsen. So great participation in these two-year-old races later today.
Yeah. Looking forward to the big fields, and Andrew Byrne and everybody here in the NIRA racing office do a fantastic job getting these fields together. You know, this time of year, it's tough to convince trainers to want to run horses a mile and an eighth. A lot of people don't like that. And this race has been much maligned the last few years as far as what happens afterwards. Well, you know what? Of the last 10 winners, 5 of them went on to win grade ones in their careers. So as far as people want to knock the Remsen, I don't know if that's such a good idea when you take a look at the last 10 winners, and you got some really good ones on there like Catholic Boy and Honor and Serve.
I guess that comes from a tweet that our good friend and your host on the Bristnet.com call-in show, Ed DeRosa, sent earlier this week, pointing out the fact that of the last 10 winners of the Remsen, only one, Mohamed, came back and won in their next start after taking the Remsen. I thought that was an interesting stat, but then you adeptly pointed out that, you know what? Hey, there's several grade one winners on that list as well. They just didn't win next time out after the Remsen.
Well, I think it's great that we both were so passionate. We both defended our home turf.
Yeah.
Right? I'm not going to let anybody talk bad about anything that happens over at the Big A. So. yeah, this is a good renewal. You know, we're lacking a little star power in here, and right now, I think we have a couple of horses in here that are going to be very nice horses and that are going to rattle some cages on the Derby Trail this year. Kieran was on yesterday, Kieran McLaughlin. He really seems to like Aja Weed. I like this horse as well. I liked his effort in the British Futurity. I think it kind of got lost because he's a Shadwell. The Godolphin runner Maxfield ran by that field, but they were tied to the 3/8 full. So I think his performance got a little lost because Maxfield started this run at the 5/8 full and just kept going. And it was just like, well, what are we seeing here? And Aja Weed was kind of spinning his wheels for a little bit, and then he kind of leveled off and picked some horses up late. I think, again, he has that two-turn experience, having run in the Breeders' Futurity. I think he's going to be tough. Todd Pletcher has two in here. Alpha 66 is the one I'm more interested in, though his uncoupled stablemate Chase Tracker is a little bit faster. I think this horse will appreciate the distance a little more. He was beaten just a length for second in the Champagne race that Tis the Law won by Daylight. The Blinkers will come off Alpha 66. They'll go on his stablemate Chase Tracker, who was third behind good-looking two-year-old Independence Hall in the National here. I'm going to give Bill Mott's two-year-old Forzadoro my top pick in here. Source's maiden race when he got beat by Ajaweed first time out. You got to go back and watch this replay. He just stood in the gate, made this huge run into the quarter pole, and looked like he was going to keep going. And he leveled out. He got tired late. It was understandable. He was 31-1. Ajaweed had already run. Ajaweed handled them that day. He came back to break his maiden, and now he's going to get the two turns. He kind of runs like a horse that they don't write these races long enough for him. So I put Forzadoro on top, hoping that the two turns and the mile and eighth was the great equalizer, but you can make a case for five or six of these horses.
Yeah, really good race. That's the Grade 2 Remsen, 3:43 Eastern. It is race number 9, the penultimate race on that Saturday program at the Big A. Race 10, here we go, the Grade 1 Cigar Mile, and a field of 11 set to go. The favorite figures to be the three-year-old Maximum Security. Big A, you talked about the fact that moving this program back, Aqueduct was hoping to attract more Breeders' Cup horses. You have two in here, including the winner of the Breeders' Cup Dirt Mile.
Yeah, I think it was important. I think it's worth noting, too, keep an eye on the scratches. I wouldn't be surprised if Nicodemus came out to run tomorrow in the fall highway. That'll probably be the case, so it'll be a field of 10. But, yeah, I think they have to be very happy with the participation in here. Look, you get the arguably the most talked-about horse in all of 2019, the only horse to ever be disqualified from the win on the day of the Kentucky Derby in Maximum Security. You get a really nice late-blooming three-year-old in Spun to Run. I think he kind of gets lost in the shuffle here. He's a three-year-old still, and he's won his last two by a good way against older horses. You have the tough-as-nails Whitmore in here. You know, it's just a good bunch of horses, really good bunch of horses. Kieran's high on True Timber. If you listened to that interview yesterday, he was really pumped up about True Timber's chances today. Look, the race is going to go through Maximum Security and Spun to Run in a number of ways. Most importantly, they're the controlling speed horses in this race. And Maximum Security is probably faster than Spun to Run, but Herod Ortiz Jr. and his trainer Juan Carlos Guerrero said of Spun to Run, he's just better on the front end. He can't get in front of Maximum Security, but I got to think he's going to be the one to put the pressure on. I think that opens the door for a horse like True Timber, who in the Bold Ruler last time was forced to do the dirty work on Maximum Security. Again, another wide-open race. I know a lot of people look at this and say, oh, well, it's Maximum Security and Spun to Run. I don't. I want to use five. I'm going to use five horses, half the field, in my Empire 6 ticket. I'm going to use the two favorites. I'm going to use True Timber. I'm putting Looking at Bikinis on top for Chad Brown. This horse had two troubled trips at Saratoga. One, he was against the bias, which was not favoring inside speed in the curling. He was on the rail and on the front end, and then he lost all chance at the Travers. You take those two races off his card, he's a perfect 3-for-3. Two wins at Belmont, one going this one-turn mile off of a considerable layoff, almost 9 months, and then last time out at Keeneland, man, he was breaking sticks. He galloped in a money allowance race going 7 furlongs. I think the one-turn mile is going to hit him right between the eyes. He stacked up outside in the draw. And then his stablemate, Network Effect, he's done very little wrong as well. Broke his maiden first out, going 7-8 at Saratoga. A couple of good efforts in the Nashua and the Remsen. We didn't see him for almost a year. He came back to win off that layoff, going this one-turn mile over the track. Obviously, both of them are taking considerable steps up in company now. But they're 15-1 on the morning line. You know, yeah, you're trading in some class for a lot of points on the tote board. I made Looking at Bikinis my top pick, but I'm just looking forward to this race. Like I said, you can make a case for five or six of them. I'm going to use 5, 6, 8, 9, 11, and Looking at Bikinis is the top pick.
Yeah, it's a great race. 4:16 Eastern post time for the Grade 1 Cigar Mile. Race number 10 at the Big A later this afternoon. For me, sentimentally, and I agree with your handicapping logic, but sentimentally, I got to be cheering for number one, Whitmore, the six-year-old gelded son of Pleasantly Perfect, Ron Moquet, Joel Rosario aboard here today, and Joel gets along with this horse pretty well, at least the one time he rode him earlier this year in the Phoenix. I cheer for Whitmore. He shows up, he dances every dance, and he always seems to run his race. And boy, how cool would it be to see him win that race later today?
And that vignette that we had on our Breeders' Cup broadcast last year brought a tear to many eyes. Kurt and Jude did a fantastic job with that vignette. You as well, Lee. Everybody did a fantastic job with it. You know, Ron was quoted leading up to this race saying, he's tearing down the barn. And they've never tried this. This is going to be Whitmore's 31st start. He's going to try to go a mile for the first time. I'll tell you one thing. If Maximum Security and Spun to Run hit up front, and they probably will, I mean, crazier things have happened than a good old hard-knocking horse, class horse like Whitmore, picking him up and laying him down late with one of the best riders, I think, in the game. Joel's going good right now as well. It's just, I mean, he's a horse you can make a case for. You can make a case for pat on the back, I think. Bal Harbor, we even talked about Bal Harbor, Todd Fletcher, 8-1. This horse could be the half length of Preservationist in the Woodward. Didn't really handle a slop last time in the Fayette. And again, you know, a mile and an eighth is probably out of his scope, this one-turn mile. He's 3-for-5 at the distance. He's won here at Aqueduct going the mile. You can make a case for him as well. You can make a case for 7 or 8 of the horses in this race.
Make sure you're tuned in to Anthony every Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday afternoon here on the network. He and Steve Grabowski host Red Brand Radio, 3 to 6 Eastern Time, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. That's right here on Sirius 219, XM 201, and streaming worldwide on our website, horseracingradio.net. He's also part of the Brisnet.com call-in show on Thursday nights and the Weekend Stakes Preview presented by Naira Betts. If you want to check out the podcast of those programs, they're available for you at horseracingradio.net. Big A, 30 seconds before I have to get to this next segment, but if Maximum Security wins today's Cigar Mile, is he the three-year-old champion, yes or no?
He'll get my vote, and I think he will be. I voted on the poll, which is up at Twitter at HR, and yeah, I mean, right now my vote's a Code of Honor. That can only change with a Maximum Security win today.
All right, well, there you have it. Big A, appreciate the visit. Enjoy the day at the Big A, and we'll talk to you soon, my friend.
You got it, Baron.
All right, and again, all that action coming up later today in New York. 6 stakes races, 4 of those graded, including that Grade 1 Cigar Mile. Going to get to our Lexus Legends of the Turf segment, brought to you every Saturday at this time by the Lexus Store of Lexington. When I come back, it's D.G. Van Cleef looking back on, well, the year that has been in Virginia and talking about Pearl Harbor. This is your Lexus Legends of the Turf.
To be labeled a titan of the turf is neither to be taken lightly nor a term to be recklessly bandied about. By anybody's measure or means, the subject of this piece has to be unqualifiedly classified as indeed a true titan of the turf. His lifetime spanned the administrations of American presidents Ulysses S. Grant through Lyndon Baines Johnson. And when he passed away in 1966 as a nonagenarian at the age of 92, a bright, sparkling light in the world of thoroughbred racing suddenly went dark. He was born in a small cottage in Brooklyn, New York, on July 23, 1874, on land, which later became part of the old Sheep's Head Bay racetrack. At the age of 11, on the very day Grover Cleveland was inaugurated as president, he joined the racetrack colony as an errand boy for the Dwyer Brothers stable while sleeping in the loft. He became a jockey at the age of 16 and rode until 1901, when he switched to training. His last mount was a horse called Agnes D, who finished dead last in a field of 5 in the title stakes at Sheepshead Bay. The scales of justice were to be balanced, as it were, since Agnes D was the very first winner he saddled as a trainer a few races later, and with that win came the inception of an absolutely phenomenal career. Between 1907, when tabulated records began, and the end of his 5-star career, he saddled 2,275 winners, including virtually every major stakes race east of the Mississippi. His inaugural stakes winner was Stargaze in the Merchants and Citizens Handicap in the Saratoga Cup. This guy only had a 6th-grade formal education, and he rode very poorly, but he trained thoroughbreds with unmatched success for the likes of Colonel E. V. D. Morrell, James F. Quincy Johnson, Ambassador Breckinridge Long, Senator Johnson Camden, William Woodward Sr. and Jr., Ogden Mills Phipps, Ogden Phipps, Edith Woodward Bancroft, Mrs. Whitney Sloan, dancer Vernon Castle, and a warden at the Sing Sing Prison, among many, many others. His horses, including Bold Ruler, Nashua, and Gallon Fox, won 470 stakes races. He often said his best distance horse had been Diabolo, and Johnstown his best sprinter. To this day, he's the only trainer with two Triple Crown winners to his credit, Gallon Fox and Omaha. Among other standouts he trained were Apache, Bassouette, Fighting Fox, Vagrancy, Bushanda, High Voltage, Misty Morn, Mary Lassie, and Happy Gal. The subject of this profile had another quite remarkable talent as well. He developed his own veterinary supplies for ailing horses, and he personally used them as well as prescribing them for others. Eddie Arcaro at one time had severe bursitis problems and very nearly quit riding as a result. But the man herein being profiled put Arcaro on a leg paint he had developed for horses. Now, Eddie may have had a horsey smell about him going postward, but it helped him put on many of those inimitable pumping, driving finishes going to the wire. Yes, indeed, he did have a way with riders. In the early 1900s, he took a young Hebrew rider under his tutelage whose name was Walter Miller. Miller had not ridden a single winner in 1907, his apprentice year, but in 1908 he won 388 races while under the tutorial guidance of our man. That 388 win record stood for 40 years. Hedley Woodhouse was the last to ride in the colors of our subject, red and orange. Woodhouse once apologized for giving one of his horses less than satisfactory a ride in a major stakes race, and our man replied, quote, "You couldn't have ridden him any worse than I would have." The man who went his way to meet the Grim Reaper in that great paddock in the sky at the nonagenarian age of 92 in 1966 won the Kentucky Derby 3 times, the Preakness 4 times, the Belmont 6 times, the Jockey Club Gold Cup 7 times, the Lawrence Realization, Wood Memorial, and Alabama Stakes 8 times, the Dwyer 9 times, and the Saratoga Cup a remarkable 10 times. He was the man who once said, quote, "When you're away from New York, you're camping out." The saga of this venerable monument to thoroughbred racing, worthy of a Homerian epic, and the stuff of which legends are crafted, was a legend in his own time. He was Sonny Jim Fitzsimmons, the man from Brooklyn.
Visionary design, visceral performance, and imaginary technology. That's Lexus. When every detail, every moment, and every emotion is crafted by Lexus, it leads to amazing. Experience artistry that inspires, design that compels, and engineering that excites. This is Mike Penna, and I can tell you personally, as a Lexus owner, the enjoyment you'll experience from driving any of the Lexus model lines is unparalleled. Visit the Lexus store of Lexington today and see what I've been talking about for nearly 15 years. The people truly make the difference. Lexus has also been a longtime supporter of the horse industry, with a Keeneland shop located at the Lexus store of Lexington and through their sponsorship of Keeneland's Lexus Raven Run Stakes each fall. And remember, when you go to the Lexus store, ask for the Godfather, Tony Attiano. Talk horses and experience amazing in your brand new Lexus.
Bloom Racing. Started by former jockey and 35-year racing industry veteran Jeffrey Bloom, Bloom Racing offers racing partnerships, bloodstock services, pinhooking, and private race management.
Pulling away from Come Dancing, Mopetism, and the others, Midnight Bizou leaves no doubt today. She won the Phipps in hand.
Experience the fun, excitement, and exclusive access of racehorse ownership with Bloom Racing. Forming racing partnerships now, get in on the action at bloomracing.com.
And they're off.
Experience the thrill of stakes races at Laurel Park's Maryland Spectacular Day on Saturday, December 7th. That's today. Enter for a chance to choose a gift from our $10,000 giving tree. Take home a 2020 Maryland racing calendar and bring a new unwrapped toy for the toy drive. Post time is 12:25 p.m. Visit laurelpark.com for details. That's laurelpark.com.
I'm speaking with Joe Brown Nicholson of Nicholson Insurance Agency. Joe, can you explain how the claims process works? Knock on wood, I haven't experienced a claim recently and hope I never will, but what happens?
Well, Mike, after we are notified by the insured of an accident or event, we will submit a claim report to the company, giving basic details of the claim. A claims representative will then contact the insured to walk them through the claim settlement process. Most claims are settled promptly, efficiently, and to the complete satisfaction of the insured.
Well, that sounds fair.
Basically, the insured is buying an insurance policy, which is a promise to pay in the event of a covered claim. It also provides peace of mind, absent of a claim. That's the way it works.
Thanks, Joe. For all your equine and general insurance needs, call Nicholson Insurance Agency at 859-224-7080. You gotta know Joe.
This is Carlos Martin, and you're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
As they wind around to the quarter pole, it's Credit Swap in front. Here's English B shooting the breeze, coming up to join them on the outside, but English B pokes a nose in front at the top of the stretch. Credit Swap battles on down toward the inside. Down the far outside, trying to wind up is Jace's Solitude. In behind horses, shooting the breeze. Track Smith is trying to run on. Final furlong time now. Credit Swap is resurgent after those slow early fractions. English B right to his outside. Here's Jace's Solitude on the outside. Track Smith trying to find room. It's English B who leads it. Down the outside is Jace's Solitude. English B, Jace's Solitude. These two hit the wire together. I think English B held on. Jace's Solitude was right there. Credit Swap had to settle for third.
Welcome back to the Equine Forum here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, coming to you from our Jimmy Johns of Lexington studios here in the heart of the Bluegrass, Lexington, Kentucky. That was Jason Beam with the call of this year's Virginia Derby. It was a race you heard right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network, and an historic race considering the fact that Colonial was going through somewhat of a resurrection, if you will. And the folks at Colonial Downs doing a phenomenal job with that program and with the entire meet, looking forward to bigger and even better things coming up in 2020. And I told you at the top of the show that not only are things going well in Virginia, and not only has it been somewhat of a challenging year for the sport of thoroughbred racing, I'm going to talk about those things with our next guest, but I think even more importantly is the fact that today is Pearl Harbor Day, a day to remember what happened 78 years ago. December 7th, 1941, and I know that hits home for so many of you who had family members that were either killed or injured in that attack, or even those of you who have served in the military, in particular the Naval Academy and the Navy. It really does hit home, and this is a special day, and I couldn't think of anybody better to help look back on Pearl Harbor Day and look ahead to what the industry faces than D.G. Van Cleef, who is a retired Navy officer and former president of the Breeders' Cup and the man who helped launch everything with the NTRA, now the chairman of the Virginia Racing Commission. DG, good morning and welcome to the program.
Good morning, Mike, and thanks for having me on the program.
Yeah, happy to have you on board. And, you know, I'll go one step further. We have a segment on this show every Saturday morning, which is called the Industry Star of the Week. It's presented by our friend Stuart Morris, who consigns horses to all the major sales. And I couldn't think, on this particular day, I couldn't think of anybody better to honor as our Industry Star of the Week with everything you've accomplished in the sport and, of course, serving our country. So, first of all, congratulations on that, and thank you for your service.
Well, thank you very much. I'm not sure that's all that well-deserved in my case, but you're very nice, and thank you for tying the show into a remembrance of Pearl Harbor and those who sacrificed so much all those years ago.
As somebody who served in the Navy, when you hear the date, December 7th, 1941, what are some of the things that come to mind for you, DG?
Well, as a child, we grew up on World War II history. My dad was a combat infantryman, served in Europe with the 4th Infantry Division, and so we were pretty well indoctrinated into the history, and so anybody that says December 7th around our house, we all know exactly what happened on that day and what it means and what it meant for the country at that point.
Talk a little bit about your service and the reason that you ended up joining the Navy.
Well, my service, I should hasten to point out, was not terribly consequential, certainly compared to many who have given more time and sacrificed a lot more than I ever did. But I did serve in the Navy. I was commissioned as an officer shortly after graduating from the University of Virginia, and I served my 3 years on active duty with the 2nd Marine Division.
Okay. And was that something, when you were in the Navy, were you, I assume you were always conscious about what happened 78 years ago?
Absolutely. Of course, it's a day that is a big deal. And certainly from a naval service standpoint, it's something that nobody that ever served will ever forget.
I know that you have ties to the horse industry in Virginia. Your family has ties to the horse industry, so you were kind of raised in the sport. How did you eventually become on the executive side of things? How did you eventually get into that side of it?
Well, I had an opportunity to come to Lexington and go to work for Fezzik Tipton back in the mid-1970s. I was employed at their insurance agency, then migrated over to the sales company. Ended up getting recruited into a racetrack management job in Los Angeles, and then back to go to work for this new concept back then in 1982 called the Breeders' Cup.
You know, it's interesting. You mentioned Breeders' Cup. I can remember, and I don't know if I've ever had – I don't think I have. I don't think I've ever had the opportunity to thank you publicly for this, but when my wife and I first moved from Massachusetts to Kentucky in 1997, we didn't know anybody. I just wanted to get involved in the industry somehow. Started knocking on doors. One door that I knocked on, and I'm eternally grateful for doing it, is Benny Bell and Ruthie Bowen, who were – Benny still has her advertising agency, but in 1997 she had one at a different location. And I can remember she sat down with me, and I told her I wanted to get involved in the business, and she made a list of people to go talk to. And your name was on that list. Nick Nicholson was on that list. And I'm thinking, these are people I've only seen on TV and read about in the racing form. There's no way I'm going to pick up the phone and call them. But I did. I called you. You took my meeting. You sat down and talked with me and gave me some great advice. And so I'll thank you now publicly all these years later for all your help and all your support.
Well, you're more than welcome. I'm glad it worked out.
Yeah, I'll never forget that day. So let's talk about what's happening now in Virginia. I mentioned your role that you were kind of started in 2013, but I mentioned that role that you're now the chairman of the Virginia Racing Commission. Tell me about what's happening in the state.
Okay. We're very pleased with where we are right now. And in fact, the word renaissance or the word revival would apply. And 5 years ago, Virginia racing was virtually flat on its back. In 2014, the owner of Colonial Downs surrendered their operating license, and everything with the exception of steeplechasing went pretty dormant. Luckily for the industry, a not-for-profit organization, which became an umbrella, over the horsemen, the breeders, the racing association operators that remained, called the Virginia Equine Alliance, emerged. And that gave the industry, or what was left of it, some political clout. And it led to, several years later, Governor Northam here in Virginia signing our historical horse racing wagering bill, which put racing back on its feet almost immediately. And, of course, the rest is history. This year, we've got historical horse racing up and running. We went from just a few million dollars in handle in this state, most of it through ADW, to $900 million in handle on HHR thus far this year. Probably total handle of around $1 billion this year, and 15 days of live racing. And we're very proud of what the group that now operates Colonial Downs has achieved. It was a superb race meet. We had great support from around the country, from stables and trainers around the country, and it looks like we're off and running. I think the future looks bright.
Yeah, what does 2020 hold in terms of what we might be looking at for that Colonial Downs meet and how that might affect what we see on the other sides of the industry in Virginia, a la the breeding industry, for example?
I think you can expect to see some growth. It won't be immense, but it'll be important. We have 15 days of racing this year. The current historical horse racing legislation and regulations tie live racing to the number of horse racing, or historical horse racing, I should say, machines deployed. So as more machines are deployed in the state, there'll be more live days of racing. I think you will see somewhere in the vicinity of between 20 and 25 days of racing next year.
Wow.
That's yet to be determined. We're expecting a license and dates application at our meeting upcoming in a couple of weeks, and we'll know a little more then. But I think we'll see some growth as early as next year.
I can tell you, after we were part of the Virginia Derby and providing that coverage here on the network, that just being there, there was a sense of there was, number one, a sense of pride because Virginia has a long and storied racing history. There was a sense of pride that was palpable. And then there was an excitement and an enthusiasm that you don't often get at smaller racetracks like that. There was a buzz, DG, that I know you were there, but there was a buzz that I felt from our broadcast position, and I felt it all throughout the entire night. It means an awful lot to people.
Well, you could feel that buzz actually throughout the meet.
Yep.
I think part of it is that after an absence of 4 years and no action at that racetrack at all, it's novel again. That is an area of the state where the jobs that are being created by the resurgence of racing are very important to the population there. I think that added a positive feel to it. And there, as you point out, there's a sense of pride. There's a great history when it comes to horse racing in the Commonwealth of Virginia, and I think people were proud to be there. So it was a great buzz, and I hope we can sustain it.
Talking with D.G. Van Cleef Jr. here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. As I mentioned, D.G., the former president of the Breeders' Cup, he was instrumental in launching the NTRA and now chairman of the Virginia Racing Commission, and more importantly, a retired Navy officer. And we remember Pearl Harbor on this day 78 years later. D.G., in terms of what we're seeing on the national scale, this has been, to say the least, a difficult year for the sport of thoroughbred racing with some of the things that have taken place. From your perspective, as somebody who has served this sport for so many years and served in a very high level, where do you see this sport currently and where do you see it heading?
Well, I think you look at it a couple of different ways. I mean, from the standpoint of just business indicators, 2019 looks like it's going to wind up being okay. Maybe not great, but stable, and that's good. At this point, it looks like our national handle figures are off a little bit compared to 2018, maybe down about 1.5%. But purses look like they're going to wind up about 5%, so that's good news. The boutique meets, which you would expect, such as Keeneland and Del Mar, Saratoga, Oaklawn, and now Colonial Downs, are doing very well. Alternative revenue sources, in this case, historical horse racing, are coming online in a very important way. It's what's enabled live racing to come back in Virginia, and it's creating, from where I sit, a bit of a revival in Kentucky too, with what's going on at Churchill, the acquisition of Turfway. I think that's good news across the board. Obviously, it's been a challenging year for thoroughbred horse racing, and we all are under the microscope, whether we want to be or not, with a sort of tsunami of negative opinion generated by activists, state government, and the media in California after the rash of fatalities there. Safety is obviously front and center, and we are under a microscope, and how we conduct ourselves over the next several years, I think, will be essential. So we understand that here in Virginia, and putting safety first and foremost for our equine and human athletes was a big deal leading into the race meet this summer.
Yeah, you know, every time we're faced with adversity in the sport, especially on a national level, the cry goes out to create a national racing commission and to have a racing commissioner like you have in other sports with the NBA and with the NFL and Major League Baseball. We don't have that, and we don't have it because of the way that our sport is set up with the individual states kind of having their own legislations and their own set of rules. If somebody came to you and said, hey, we can do this, we can create a National Racing Commission, we want you to be the commissioner, what's the first thing or the first couple of things you're going to focus on in that position to move the sport forward?
Well, I think most of us would agree that uniformity, it's long been elusive, but it is a highly desirable goal. And I think we have to keep working towards uniformity, however we get there. Maybe beside the point, but we need uniform rules, and we need rules that will ensure the safety of our athletes. So I think adversity sometimes brings us together. Maybe it's the only thing that brings this industry together. And you're seeing a move, whether it's through federal legislation or through cohesion amongst racing operators, I think we're going to see a great deal of movement towards uniformity. I think we've got a chance to get there this time, and I think that will be absolutely critical, not only from the standpoint of implementing protocols, safety protocols that really work, but also from a public perception standpoint, and you cannot overemphasize the importance of that perception.
Yeah, he's D.G. Van Cleef here on the Horse Racing Radio Network, and D.G., like all of our guests who appear on the program, is going to receive a gift courtesy of Embrace the Race. It is the apparel for the horse racing lifestyle. Wear what you love and embrace your passion at EmbraceTheRace.com. DG, really appreciate the visit. And again, thank you for taking a little time to remember Pearl Harbor. And thank you for your service to our country as well.
Well, thank you, Mike. Again, thank you for that remembrance. And I appreciate being on the show. It's great to talk with you again.
All right. Thanks so much. DG Van Cleef Jr. here on HRRN, doing a great job in Virginia as part of that team. And as you heard him say, a resurrection, a revival, whatever you want to go with. I think, in my opinion, Virginia, Colonial Downs, that industry, the comeback story of the year in thoroughbred racing. And I think they deserve a special Eclipse Award for everything that they were able to do here in 2019. Going to get to another break. I'll come back and get you set for the second half of the program. Several guests yet to come. This is the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, your home for racing's biggest events.
Power.
Caraconti has won.
Passion.
It's Caraconti winning by about a neck or so.
Performance.
Caraconti and O'Donnell. Caraconti.
Gainsway Stallion Caraconti, a three-time Grade 1 winner, including a scintillating win in the Breeders' Cup Mile in 1:32 and 4/5, recording a 1:14 buyer speed figure. From the Totney Arcos female family, his third dam is the hugely influential champion, Miesque. Caraconti was a precocious Group 1 winner as a two-year-old and has already sired three first crop stakes winners and two additional stakes place two-year-olds, including Kenzai Warrior. The Group 3 winner remains undefeated in three starts in England. And Caraconti has commercial appeal, with two-year-olds having sold to major stables for $150,000, $365,000, and $460,000. Caraconti has the performance, pedigree, and physical, and stands value priced at $10,000 at Gainsway.
Hi, Tony.
Hey, Matthew.
There's a reason why Tony's Steaks and Seafood is my favorite restaurant. It's because I want to feel part of the family. Isn't that right, Tony?
That's right. There's a saying on the wall that I truly believe in. There's always room for one more at our table. We just want you to be part of our family.
And believe me, you will be. It's Tony's Steaks and Seafood right across from Triangle Park. Visit them at TonysSteaksAndSeafood.com.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
It's time now to shine the spotlight on the Darley Taking the Reins Performer of the Week.
And it's Gold Standard and Bolera with Arafana in third as they come down for the eighth pole. Bolera pokes ahead in front. Gold Standard is racing in second now with Arafana in third. It's Bolera with the lead inside the 16th pole. And Bolera is on to victory in the Grade 3 Cumley.
Bolera, the three-year-old daughter of Darley Stallion Bernardini, earned a 90 buyer speed figure while recording her first graded stakes victory in the Grade 3 Cumley last Friday at Aqueduct. And that win makes her your Darley Taking the Reins Performer of the Week. Darley Stallion Bernardini is now the sire of 21 graded stakes winners on dirt since 2015. Only Tappet and Curlin have more. Learn more about Bernardini and all the Darley Stallions by visiting DarleyAmerica.com.
This is Christophe Clément. You are listening to the Horse Racing Video Network.
Hefner at the top of the stretch in the Remsen. Here is Flexibility. On the outside is Gift Box, and towards the rail it's Mohamed. So three of them arrive at the eighth pole together. Flexibility, Mohamed, Gift Box is now in third, and now there's a 16th out, and now Mohamed has taken over the lead, and the Tappet Colt is going to stay undefeated. He's 3 for 3. Mohamed the winner by 2. Flexibility was second, and Gift Box finished third.
Mohamed for Kieran McLaughlin winning the Remsen back in 2015 under jockey Junior Alvarado. Big win. Mohamed came back and won again in his next start. The only horse in the last 10 years, the only Remsen winner in the last 10 years to come back and win in his next start. And as we know, Mohamed, a pretty darn good son of Tappet, and Kieran looking for another victory in the Remsen later this afternoon. You're going to hear from Kieran coming up in the second half of the show, right around 9:20 Eastern time. He talked with Anthony Stabile on Red Brand Radio yesterday afternoon, and I'll have that interview for you. I think you'll enjoy hearing from him. He talks about not only the Remsen, but also the Grade 1 Cigar Mile later this afternoon. You heard from DG in that last segment, and I told you that he was our industry star of the week for this segment, presented by Stuart Morris for this Saturday morning. Don't forget that Stuart offers a boutique full-service bloodstock operation. He wants to thank his owners, his clients, and his team. He knows his success is because of you. And with multiple stakes horses over the past 3 years, including Henley's Joy, Our Brain Trust, and Malagasy, Stuart is your source for success at the highest levels. All you have to do is visit him or give him a call. You can do that too, but his consignments are at all the major sales, and it's Stuart Morris, and my thanks to Stuart for his support of that segment, a special segment today with DG Van Cleef, remembering Pearl Harbor. Also, don't forget that if you're going to be betting Kieran's horses or any of the races later today, you can do that at expressbet.com, and more importantly, you'll want to go there. If you don't have an ExpressBet account, first of all, you're really missing out. The video presentation on their website is exceptional. Their app is exceptional. It is so easy to wager on that app. And you can do it on the website, too. That's a piece of cake, too. And they offer a $125 sign-up bonus when you open your new account using promo code HRRN. So you want to do that today. Promo code HRRN. That's important. You have to type in that promo code in order to get the $125 sign-up bonus. But it also lets the folks at ExpressBet know that you are a member of HRN Nation. Go there now, expressbet.com. Open your new account using promo code HRRN at expressbet.com and start betting the races with that $125 sign-up bonus. All right, busy second half of the program kicks off with Steve Renfley. He's the president of the ITBOA. We'll talk to him next. Again, Kieran at 9:20 and Jeremiah Engelhart coming up toward the end of the program, 9:40 Eastern, to talk about his horses in the stakes races at Aqueduct later today. Back with hour number two, right after we pause 10 seconds for station identification. This is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
From the rail to your radio, this is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Midnight Visa was closing on the outside. Blue Prize has it, though, close to home. And it's going to be Blue Prize and John Bravo to win the Breeders' Cup Distaff.
Bowie's Hero from the outside. Diamond Oops, Bowie's Hero. Next shares to the inside. Bowie's Hero. Bowie's Hero wins the Shadwell Turf Mile.
From our Jimmy John's of Lexington studios, welcome to the Equine Forum, presented by Red Brand Fence.
McKenzie is all out, but today belongs to Mongolian Groove. It's Mongolian Groove, wire to wire in the awesome again under Abel Sadil. McKenzie settles for second.
Chancelot at the 16th pole. McTully runs at him. Chancelot and McTully. McTully's a monster. McTully wins the sprint.
Now, here's Mike Pena.
Welcome back. Hour number two of the Equine Forum. Very busy morning continuing here on HRRN. Mike Pena, Baron of the Backstretch, in our Jimmy John's of Lexington broadcast studios. If you did miss any portion of this show or any of our shows, all you have to do is head back to our website, horseracingradio.net, and you can check out the podcast at your leisure. My interview with the Big A Anthony Stabile was in the first half of the program. He handicapped all four greatest stakes at Aqueduct later today. And that interview a short time ago with D.G. Van Cleef, the chairman of the Virginia Racing Commission, talking about some of the issues facing the sport today and how he might handle them if he was in a position to do so as a commissioner of the sport of thoroughbred racing. Interesting stuff from D.G. You can head over to horseracingradio.net and check out the podcast. Well, I told you it's a busy second half of the show, and it's one of the cool things about this time of year is that you have an opportunity to participate in a stallion auction, which begins today, goes the 7th through the 16th of December, and you can go to iowathoroughbred.com to learn more, but the ITBOA involved with this particular auction, so many top stallions which you can bid on, and I know that that's music to the ears of Steve Renfley, who is the president of the ITBOA. He is with me now here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Steve, good morning and welcome to the show.
Well, thank you. Nice to be on.
Yeah, this particular auction is so unique, and it's we've been talking about it now for a few years here on the network, but you look at the list of stallions that are available for people to bid on, and they're coming from everywhere, places like, you know, Edina Springs and Darley and Hillendale and Pin Oak. They've been such big supporters of this auction over the years. Tell me more about it.
Well, as of yesterday, we have 130 seasons to be auctioned from 22 states. 37 from Kentucky.
Wow.
They're up for bid starting today.
Wow.
And,
yeah.
And we're still adding some. We'll add some right up to through the first of next week. Anybody can always, any of the stallion farms or owners want to donate their stallions, we'll take them right up to the end.
Yeah, and this is an online auction, so the bidding has to take place through, well, I say iowathoroughbred.com, and that link will take you to the actual auction page. Is that right?
That's right, or they can go direct to www.thoroughlybred.com, or you know the ITBOA webpage will get you there, too. It has a link to click on, and then when it comes up, it will show all the stallions. But you click on the stallion part up at the top where it says stallions, and it will take you right to the bidding.
One thing that's so unique about this auction, and one of the things I love most about it, is that the stallion owner can also receive some significant money just for donating a season. Tell me a little bit about that part of it.
Well, yeah, last year we had the three stakes from the two-year-old stakes, and it was won by an Oklahoma horse, donated by season was donated by War Horse Place. Gramity, who just got, was a stallion, who just got sold to, I believe, Saudi Arabia, if I'm not mistaken. And then Windstar had the one of them, Bellamy Road, with the other winner, Windstar Farm. They all received $5,000. Darley had the other one. Garolamo was the other stallion. So it's nice. The stallion farms appreciate it when their horses, offspring, colts win or fillies, and they get some money back. The owners are very happy about that.
Yeah, it's a great program and a great concept. Where did this concept come from, Steve?
Well, we've been doing it for quite a few years. We used to have a, before it was, we had an auctioneer years ago, and it was kind of a fun deal. We'd get together, and a few alcohol beverages were being sold, and then things were actually auctioned off live at our meeting place in Des Moines, and but now it went online and it's gotten bigger every year, and thanks to all the owners and stallion farms donating these horses, so it's been a real fun deal for us. Plus the stallion stakes, I know we had a colt that won the two-year-old stake and then won the three-year-old stake, and it, I'll tell you, really pads the earnings and it helps the owners out.
Yeah, it makes a big difference. You know, so often in thoroughbred racing, the things that make headlines are not the positive things, and this is a very positive thing. So I wanted to make sure, of course, that we brought this to light. But the other aspect of the sport that gets talked about is that nobody can get on the same page, and states are always working against each other and all of these types of things. But you are getting stallions from Kentucky and from all over the country to help you in the state of Iowa. And of course they can benefit too, as we talked about, but what does that mean to have everybody working together cohesively for one goal?
Well, it's very encouraging. It's a very positive thing for all of us in the horse racing industry. And we're always happy when anybody brings their horses and runs in our stallion stakes. It's fun to see people from out of state come and see our fabulous facilities at Prairie Meadows and run their horses in our stallion stakes. And I know the Iowa bred people also like to breed the stallions that mostly are in being donated for these for the stallion stakes. So it gives them an opportunity to make more money for their farmer and owner. So that's a good thing for us here in Iowa.
Yeah, it's a great thing for Iowa and for the program there and for the notoriety of everything that you've been able to build and accomplish over the years. I was at Prairie Meadows a few years back, and I loved it. I thought that the facility was great. I had an awesome experience there. When you talk to people about Iowa racing, what are some of the things that you want them to know, Steve?
Well, it's a very friendly, Iowa people are very friendly. We have great facilities here at Prairie Meadows. They do have festival racing there also, but I think people would be surprised at the facility that we have there. It's a fantastic hotel, restaurants, the casino. It's a very pleasurable place to spend a weekend and watch some horses run. And we're pretty proud of it. We have several Iowa people playing at the top in the industry at the races. I know we have the All-Ball Family Stables, who has several horses that will be in the Derby. On the Derby Trail, and Dennis's Moments, one of them, and Thousand Words, I believe. They've had Not This Time, and Free Drop Belly, and Brody's Cause in the past. We also have Jerry Crawford and his Dongale Racing Group. And we just had one of our members from Des Moines, Aaron Kennedy, was with a partnership that was had an interest in the winner of the Storm the Court in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile. So we have people playing at the top from Iowa, too, and that's very encouraging for us here.
How about on the breeding side of things? By the way, talking to Steve Renfley, who is the president of the Iowa Thoroughbred Breeders and Owners Association, how about on the breeding side of things, Steve? Are there programs and incentives that Iowa is now offering that when you talk to people about breeding horses or foaling horses in the state of Iowa that you say, hey, this is something you'll want to take advantage of?
Absolutely. In our stallion stake races, if you have an Iowa bred that's foaled here in Iowa that's eligible for the races, the stake races, we have a 37% supplement to that race, so that can really add to the purse money. And our maiden special races are around $43,000 for Iowa breds, and so it's a pretty good incentive to foal here in Iowa. We have a new mare program. I know this year it's a $10,000 bonus. You get online and read about it on our webpage, but we had numerous people go down and buy new mares down at the Keeneland sale. And we'll be buying some here after the first year in the Fassig, Tipton, and Kingman. So it's a growing industry. And we just went to a longer meet here in Iowa from 67 days to 84. We're going to have a combination of thoroughbred and quarter horses. And some of the quarter horse guys started buying yearlings at our fall sale. So they're excited about racing some thoroughbreds along with their quarter horses. So we have some good incentives. It's a good place to foal and race in Iowa because there's some good money to be made.
Steve, where did this love of horse racing begin for you?
My dad and his best friend, we started Exarban in Omaha, and they had box seats, and they had Ed Sundberg was the guy, and he had some stallions and mares, and I kind of grew up going to the racetrack with all of the older guys. They always took me along over to Omaha to the horse races. And that was in the heydays of Omaha where you had 25,000-30,000 people on there on the weekend, and it was a fabulous place to go and watch the horses run and bet horses.
Yeah, you know, everybody that I've talked to over the years, I never had the chance to go, but everybody I've talked to about Oxarbon says, you know, that was one of those treasures that, you know, thoroughbred racing is really worse off now than it was, because that was one of the treasures that the sport could boast. It was a good thing. It was a fun place to be, and the racing was a lot of fun too.
Yes, it was fantastic. But those days are gone. We have the Racino here in Iowa, and it's doing very well. The casino, when it makes money, we get more money for our horses to run and purses, and it really works out good for us here in Iowa, so we're pretty lucky on that part of it.
Well, Steve, we'll remind people one more time. They can go to iowathoroughbred.com, click on the link. It'll take them to the Stallion Auction, which runs all the way through December 16th. And they can also go to thoroughlybred.com, which will get them to the auction page as well. And they can check out the auction and the stallions that are available from all over the country and help support a wonderful industry and all the initiatives and the great work that you guys are doing there in Iowa. And can't thank you enough for your support of what we do here on the network, and love helping you spread the word about this auction every year.
Yeah, they can. Our executive director, Brandy, she's very knowledgeable and very helpful. They can give her a call and get any help they want. And I'd like to mention Alan Poindexter, who breeds about 25 to 30 of his mares here in Iowa. And he helps get a lot of stallions for us, donations out of Kentucky. Thank you, Alan. And I thank you guys for helping promote this. It's very exciting for us.
Yeah, well, keep up the good work, Steve, and all the best with the auction, and let's have another record year. It sounds like you're going to.
Yeah, we're planning on it. Thank you very much.
All right, Steve, happy holidays.
Yeah, you too.
Steve Renfley is the president of the ITBOA, and my thanks to Steve for the visit here this morning. Again, iowathoroughbred.com is where you can go to link to that stallion auction and learn more about all the programs there in the state of Iowa. Going to get to another break. I'll come back. You'll hear that interview with Kieran McLaughlin. He sat down with the Big A yesterday on Red Brand Radio. That's all ahead. Plus Jeremiah Engelhart to wrap up the program, talking about his horses in the stakes races at Aqueduct later today. This is the Equine Forum on HRRN, all presented by Red Brand Fence, manufacturing the V-Mesh and non-climb fence you see on horse farms worldwide.
Hello, I'm Michael Blowen, founder of Old Friends Thoroughbred Retirement Farm. One of our highest priorities for these living legends is safety. That's why the fence we trust most at Old Friends is the V-Mesh Keepsake from Red Brand. Keepsake features a V-Mesh weave to prevent hooves from getting caught, and the mesh design flexes on impact. Learn more about the quality, safety, and long-lasting value of Keepsake V-Mesh Horse Fence by visiting redbrand.com.
Visionary design, visceral performance, and imaginary technology. That's Lexus. When every detail, every moment, and every emotion is crafted by Lexus, it leads to amazing. Experience artistry that inspires, design that compels, and engineering that excites. This is Mike Penna, and I can tell you personally, as a Lexus owner, the enjoyment you'll experience from driving any of the Lexus model lines is unparalleled. Visit the Lexus store of Lexington today and see what I've been talking about for nearly 15 years. The people truly make the difference. Lexus has also been a longtime supporter of the horse industry, with a Keeneland shop located at the Lexus store of Lexington and through their sponsorship of Keeneland's Lexus Raven Run Stakes each fall. And remember, when you go to the Lexus store, ask for the Godfather, Tony Attiano. Talk horses and experience amazing in your brand new Lexus.
Ironicus. This graded stakes-winning millionaire defeated over 20 Grade 1 winners, including Canadian champion and Horse of the Year Up with the Birds. A Grade 2 winner and course record setter at Saratoga, he won 3 graded stakes and was runner-up in multiple Grade 1 events. This year, his first yearlings have sold for over 7 times his stud fee. The leading money earner at stud for emerging Sire of Sires Distorted Humor. Ironicus, standing at Claiborne Farm.
Stallion owners, there is still time to donate. The Iowa Thoroughbred Breeders and Owners Stallion Auction is the only auction that the stallion owner can receive up to $15,000 by donating one season. ITBOA has paid out $105,000 so far to stallion owners and farms, such as Adena Springs, Darley, Hillendale, Pin Oak, and many others. The only stallion auction where you could receive up to $15,000. December 7th to the 16th. Visit iowathoroughbred.com.
This is Bruce Brown, and you're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by Red Brand Fence.
And they are coming with a flourish at the quarter pole. Favorite Trick is yet to start his run. Cape Town is gearing up. He's five lengths away. Top of the stretch, and Real Quiet gets the lead on the outside. Indian Charlie is under the whip in second. Cape Town will have to do more. Victory Gallop is running with Hallory Hunter on the far outside. But Real Quiet is at the eighth pole. He's got the lead by two. Indian Charlie, Victory Gallop is still third, but he's coming. Real Quiet is a bit leg weary. Victory Gallop is trying. Here's the line. Real Quiet wins the 124th running of the Kentucky Derby.
People might forget that my good friend and our HRN colleague, the voice of Keeneland, Kurt Becker, called the Kentucky Derby a couple of years, and that was one of them, 1988. Real Quiet taking the Kentucky Derby. He is one of 11 Los Alamitos Futurity winners for Hall of Fame trainer Bob Baffert. Of the 11, that was his first in 1987. I'll get that right, 1987. Of the 11, Real Quiet, the only one to go on and win the Kentucky Derby the following year. Kind of interesting. But man, Bob has dominated that race. He's going to look for to add to that resume later today, looking for a 12th win in the race. He has two of the four horses entered. That's right, only a four-horse field in the Los Al Futurity. Bob has half the field entered, and he'll square off with Breeders' Cup Juvenile runner-up Anador. And we'll see if Bob can pick up number 12. Somebody else who is no stranger to being on the Kentucky Derby and Triple Crown Trail is trainer Kieran McLaughlin. And yesterday, Kieran took time to visit with the Big A on our Red Brand radio show. And Kieran started by talking about the fact that the two-year-old races at Aqueduct have actually been pretty good to him over the years.
Yes, they have. We've pointed for a lot of the races up to the Wood Memorial in April and through the winter. We feel like they have a great program for the three-year-olds and two-year-olds in the fall. So we took a shot going to Keeneland with Adja Weed last time because Joel was there and it was on Shadwell Day and he's owned by Shadwell. But going there might have been, it was a little quick back. And he's only two and was sitting there like 48 hours before. And he just didn't do as well as an older horse does when we're shipping close to a race. So he came back and he's really come on well the last few weeks. And he's working great and looking great and happy. So he just, hopefully it was just, he hooked a runner also that day, could also colt at one. But he ran. He just wasn't himself that weekend. So we're hoping he rebounds tomorrow.
Talk a little bit about that, Kieran, because, he made a sneaky run the end of this race. He made up some ground late, but it doesn't appear that way because Maxfield, now he runs under Shadwell Ajaweed, whereas Maxfield runs under Godolphin. Maxfield ran by him and, quite frankly, the rest of the field, like they were standing still. I kind of felt like Ajaweed, and I don't know, you can talk to this better than I can. I kind of feel like his performance maybe got lost in the shuffle a little bit.
Yes, it did, and he did. The Maxfield went by him like he was tied and might have took a little air out of the tires for him, or just, it just was tough on a horse when the horse goes by him so easily and quickly. But he came on to be fourth and came out of it great, and we're looking forward to tomorrow. And we feel like he's going to run a decent race, a very good race. I wish there was a little more pace in the race. I don't see much pace, but we have a hot jockey in Joel, and he likes the colt, so he will figure out a good trip, hopefully.
He wasn't too far off of it, only two or three lengths off of it in his maiden race. Does he have a little more tactical speed than he showed last time? Can he lay a little closer tomorrow?
Yes, he can. He can be even real close if he wants to be. So, again, we'll leave it up to Joel, and if nobody goes, we could be very close because he breaks well and he's right there. So we'll see how it goes.
Yeah, Field of Nine, both of Todd's horses, Alpha 66 and Chase Tracker, they kept the Central Park on the turf today, so they're both scheduled to run. You're a very good handicapper. You're one of the better handicappers I know. Who do you think the main contenders in this Remsen are tomorrow?
Well, that's a good question. I think it's a hard read because it's basically a man for all of us. But I think Mott's horse looked pretty good. The one Junior's riding, I can't say, what is it, Forza D'Oro?
Forza D'Oro, yeah. We beat him in his debut.
He looks good. Yeah. We beat him, so, and then he came back and won well. But I have a lot of respect for Todd, and Todd put blinkers on Chase Tracker, so he might, in fact, go with blinkers on from the one hole. But it's pretty evenly matched race, really. I mean, Jeremiah, Cleon Jones has won. He's only multiple winners, won twice, New York bred, but he has won twice. So it's pretty open, I think.
And again, back to your ability, and again, we're good friends, but you're a fantastic handicapper. The one thing I noticed last year, quite frankly, the last few years, even if they're not win contenders, some of these horses that have the two-turn experience, with these horses being two-year-olds, they have a little bit of an edge. Do you feel that way with Aja Weed having that two-turn race under his belt from the Keeneland race?
Yes, for sure. And we felt like all along he wants to go, the further the better. So he's a real good colt. He looks great. He's got a good mind. But he definitely wants long, the further the better. And we've got two turns under his belt, yes. And it was just back in 3 weeks, and shipping was what hopefully the negatives were. He rebounds tomorrow and runs a big one.
All right. That's Aja Weed. He figures to be a middling price, maybe 4-5-1 tomorrow afternoon. That goes as race 9, the Remsen, the grade 2 Remsen. $250,000 on the line, post time 3:43 Eastern time. Last year, True Timber almost busted up the tote board at a huge price. He was 31.5-1 in the Cigar Mile. He got beat 3/4 of a length by Pattern Recognition. Big effort last year. He comes into this off 2 races since a try in Dubai in the Godolphin Mile. Couple of good efforts behind the horses he'll face again in here. He's drawn outside True Timber in the field of 11. We'll see what Nicodemus does, whether he runs tomorrow in the Cigar or on Sunday in the Fall Highweight. Talk a little about True Timber and how he's doing since his almost upset in this event last year.
Yeah, that was a huge effort. And then we shipped to Florida and went to Dubai and came back, and he's just taking a little bit of time, and luckily Calumet is patient with us, and we just need a little time to get over the trip, and he is doing fabulous now. And the funny thing is we were thinking about putting blinkers on, and we were hoping to draw outside because he's just a funny colt. He likes to be outside, and we drew outside, and there's plenty of pace in front of us, so we can't afford to give up a lot of ground, but he's a funny colt, and he wants to be on the outside. And he was on the outside last year in the Cigar Mile when he just missed. And the last couple of times he's broke real sharp and been a little keen in between horses. So he might be a little keen again tomorrow because he's so sharp and happy. He's training fabulous. But we like outside clean face trip and just see how it goes.
Kind of forced last time to do the dirty work and chase maximum security in that bold ruler. Now you mentioned you're outside. It looks like Spun to Run is going to be the one to do the dirty work. Do you envision that maybe sitting third trip, just clear of forces outside?
That's ideal, third or fourth, I hope. Just he's so happy and keen these days. He's training real aggressive. So hopefully Joe can get him back to third or fourth, because the four, five, and six look like they both have speed, max of security, and Spun to Run. That trainer was quoted after he won the Breeders' Cup. He's much better when he's on the lead. So it looks like he's going to go, and maximum security obviously will be close. And we hope we can sit outside third or fourth.
He has had that big layoff, the break between the Godolphin Mile and the Kelso. Obviously, you've spent a big portion of your career stabled in Dubai. You've made a bunch of trips back and forth with this. Is it your belief that the extra time helps them between these races? Was this a special instance with True Timber? Because I know you've run horses back more quickly. He had almost 6 months off.
Yeah, usually we run him back quick, and he just had a few little issues and just wasn't doing great. So we need a little more time. And I've run back in 4 weeks before and won. So the trip doesn't take that much out of him, but it took a little more out of him. And then he had a couple of feet issues and one little thing after another, but it was nothing major. And he's just doing fabulous lately, so hopefully he can run a big one at a big price.
Talking with trainer Kieran McLaughlin, he has Aja Weed in the Remsen tomorrow, and then of course he has True Timber in that Grade One $750,000 Cigar Mile. You have a busy day tomorrow, Kieran. You got five runners in, and again going back to the handicapping. Empire 6 got that big carryover tomorrow. I know you'll be getting involved.
Yes. It's nice when there's a carryover and I haven't put any money in it, so I have to get it.
Mandatory payout day.
We're having the seventh race bad beat Brian, you know, named after Brian Morgan, who we lost last year at Saratoga. The owner, we're real close friends with him. And
Talk about your relationship with Brian a little bit, Kieran. I was going to ask you about Bad Beat Brian. Talk about your relationship with Brian, with the late, great Brian Morgan.
Brian was a very good horseman. He had a great eye for a horse, and he bought Closing Argument that we almost won the Derby with, one of the first horses I was involved with him. He was a kind, big-hearted guy, and went way too soon at 46 years old. But he watched every race and loved watching races. And I'm busy, so sometimes he would tell me about horses I needed to watch to try and buy. And we did. We bought some Church Paula together and a couple others. But we missed him, and he was a very good guy.
Yeah, he was. I know Brian my whole life. And, he was missed certainly this year. Up in Saratoga. Briefly, Sunday, you got the even money favorite in the Garland of Roses. Pause for the Cause. She's on a two-race win streak. Beat fellow New York Bridge in the Iroquois last time. Manny Franco going to ride her to Sunday afternoon. How's she doing?
She's doing great. Race shape isn't as kind to her. She drew one hole, and there's a lot of pace in the race. But she's sat before. And last time, I didn't think she was going to be in the lead, and she broke running and just went, and she's doing that well, but I would have liked to have been more outside, because the one hole sprinting and a ton of speed in the race, it appears. So we just have to see how it goes, but she's doing really well, and it's a good spot, and some of the other pace is pace, but it's not quality pace, so we do have quality pace, so we'll see. We don't have to be on the lead, but it sure helped her the last two times on the lead.
I guess you used up all your luck at the draw with True Timber drawing the outside and the cigar.
Yes, exactly right. But she's won from inside before, so, and she's doing really well. And then we go back to New York Reds in January and February, but this was just the timing of this worked out well.
All right. Best of luck this weekend. Kieran, as always, thanks for some time. You're the best. We'll see you out here tomorrow.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Yeah, great stuff from Kieran McLaughlin, and my thanks to Kieran for taking time to visit with the Big A yesterday on Red Brand Radio. Anja Weed going in the Remsen today, and True Timber in the Cigar Mile for the Kieran McLaughlin barn. Still to come, Jeremiah Engelhart will join me in the next segment. He will talk about his contenders in the races coming up later today. He has a very busy afternoon. I believe it's four horses entered in those races. I think I've been saying a horse in every one of the greatest stakes. That's actually not true. He doesn't have one in the Go for Juan, but he does have two in the Demoiselle. He has one in the Remsen and one in the Cigar Mile. So I'll talk to Jeremiah in the next segment. But it's time now for our monthly visit with the folks at Four Roses Bourbon. And throughout the year, I've been taking you on a auditory tour of Four Roses with Al Young. And one of the stops along the tour is the viewing room. And here it is with Al Young. All right, Al, we're here in the media room, the viewing room, which will be one of the first stops along the tour. When folks come out to Four Roses, they'll get a chance to see a video presentation of how Four Roses is crafted. They've been doing this here for a very, very long time. And this is a room that features about 30 or so chairs with the red and green striped seats, and a great little setting here for to kick off a tour here at Four Roses. Tell me a little bit more about it.
Well, you know, it's like a dream come true, because in the early days when we did tours, chances are all you got was an introduction to whoever's taking you around, and that was it. But with the video room and some of the displays that we have here in the visitor's center, you really get a good hands-on feel for Four Roses Bourbon.
And I noticed there's a placard here in the front which has the entire process laid out, and it looks like something from a chem lab. What exactly is this here?
Well, we figured it was easier for people to sort of follow the process from the grain all the way up to when it goes out the door. So we put together a board that is sort of a storyboard that talks about grain, talks about milling, talks about cooking, talks a little bit more about fermentation and distillation, and then what goes into the quality of the product before it goes into the barrel to be aged at our warehouses, which are about 45 miles west of us at Cox's Creek, Kentucky. So it's quite helpful to it, and we also do bottling down there as well. So you really get the run of show, if you will, for the bourbon making process. So from here, we'd probably go down to the front of the distillery, kind of talk a little bit about the building. And, you know, it's been around since about 1910.
Sure.
Which is kind of amazing, since we went into this expansion project. And when we went into the expansion project, we tried to keep the feel of the original architecture and everything that we added on.
It's so funny you say that, because I've always said that when you drive into Four Roses, it is like going back in time a little bit. Is that accurate?
It is quite accurate, and it's not only going back in time, but it's bizarre, because this kind of architecture is not prevalent in Kentucky, especially way out here in Lawrenceburg, Kentucky.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Tell me a little bit about the video presentation that the folks will see when they come in. I'm assuming it takes them through what they're going to see and what we're going to bring our listeners as we make our way through the tour here today.
That's right, and it gives you a little bit of a capsule of our history. It also talks about grain selection and cooking and mashing and milling and distillation a little bit in detail. Not enough to really snow anybody with the high-tech development of it, but an easy-to-understand symbiosis of what's going on in the process.
All right, well, I'm anxious to go see the rest of Four Roses. Let's make our next stop along the tour.
Absolutely.
All right, my thanks to Al Young. And again, he took me through various parts of the Four Roses Distillery. And what a great gift for the bourbon lover on your list. If you are not local, you can go to fourrosesbourbon.com. If you are local, you can stop out there to Lawrenceburg and see the distillery and even take that bourbon lover on a tour of Four Roses. You won't be disappointed. The architecture is spectacular. And when you get inside some of the rooms in the warehouses, the the sights and the sounds and the smells that you're going to get there at Four Roses are just amazing. So check them out, fourrosesbourbon.com and Four Roses Bourbon down in Lawrenceburg. Going to get to another break. I'll come back and visit with Jeremiah Engelhart. That's next on the Equine Forum on HRRN, presented by Red Brand Fence, manufacturing the V-Mesh and non-climb fence you see on horse farms worldwide.
Castleton Lions is proud to introduce precocious multiple Great Estates winner Protonico for the 2019 breeding season. A Son of Giants Causeway out of an AP Indy mare, Protonico rolled to a 12 3/4 length victory in his debut as a 2-year-old before taking the Grade 3 Smarty Jones and Grade 3 Discovery Handicap at 3, followed by an ultra game win in the Grade 2 Ali Sheba at Churchill Downs in his 4-year-old season. Protonico joins a Castleton Lions stallion roster that includes multiple Eclipse champion Gio Ponti and Blue Blood sprinter Justin Phillip. Gio Ponti is the sire of Eclipse champion Dre Fong, Canadian Classic winner Sir Dudley Diggs, and stakes winners Miss Technicality and America's Tale. While Justin Phillip is represented by exciting stakes-winning filly Safe to Say and stakes place runners Justaholic, Blushing Justine, and Upset Brewing. Protonico, Gio Ponti, and Justin Phillip standing at Castleton Lions.
Woodford Feed, where tradition merges with technology. Family-owned since 1940 and providing exceptional customer service, Woodford Feed specializes in the highest quality feed, using only the finest ingredients to ensure optimal nutrition for your horses. In addition, Woodford Feed can help with all your farm needs, including field seed, fertilizer, and weed control. So whether your horse is sprinting around the racetrack or has a foal by her side, count on Woodford Feed to provide the quality nutrition necessary to perform at the highest level. Woodford Feed, Versailles, Kentucky.
Shadwell Farm, home to world-class stallions, presents two young stars. Mohamed, undefeated 2-year-old, multiple graded stakes winner at 2 and 3. A dazzling son of Tappan, winner of his first 5 career starts, 4 in graded stakes. Grade 1 winner, Tamer Coos, winner of the Breeders' Cup Dirt Mile. This son of Spitestown was a top international miler that earned over $1.8 million. Shadwell Farm, building speed for the future.
Adina Springs Stallion, Ghost Zapper. The consistently brilliant sire of 11% black type winners, including Breeders' Cup champion and Eclipse champion female sprinter, Judy the Beauty.
Judy the Beauty! Judy the Beauty! One and a head and I thrill it!
Santa Anita Handicap winner, Shaman Ghost.
Shaman Ghost, an overwhelming force in the last 16th of a mile.
And Whitney Handicap hero, Moreno.
100 yards from home, and it's Moreno! Moreno to win the Whitney in a wire-to-wire score!
In 2019, Ghost Zapper is the sire of double-digit stakes winners for the 7th straight year, and his current stars include Del Mar Futurity winner Nucky and 3-year-old Philly sensation Guarana.
On to another impressive outing here. Guarana 2 for 2, and she's an Acorn winner.
Guarana has won the Coaching Club American Oaks over Point of Honor.
Consistently brilliant, Ghost Zapper, standing at Adina Springs. Visit AdinaStallions.com.
This is Joe Rocco Jr.
I'm John Velasquez.
My name is Victor Espinosa.
This is jockey Brian Hernandez, and you're listening to HRRN.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by Red Brand Fence.
They're arriving at the quarter pole. Prince Lucky on the outside of True Temper. Monongahela gives way on the inside. Here's Pat on the back. Now swinging out 4 wide for the stretch drive, and they're into the stretch. And Pat on the back has rushed up on the outside of Prince Lucky. It's these two at the eighth pole. Pat on the back has taken the lead. Prince Lucky tries to fight on second. True Timber is third. It is Pat on the back and Prince Lucky paddling on from the inside. But it's going to be Pat on the back to win the Kelso. Over Prince Lucky, True Timber, and Tale of Silence.
That's Larry Colmus with the call of the Kelso, Pat on the back. A big victory for Jeremiah Engelhart, who is going to be joining us shortly. At least we hope so. We are efforting Jeremiah at this time. Busy morning for him. Told you that Jeremiah has 4 horses running at Aqueduct later this afternoon, and we'll dive into those horses with him once he's on the line with us. Welcome back to the program, Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, here in our Jimmy John's of Lexington broadcast studios, edging ever closer to the first Saturday in May. I know many of you might not have been tuned in at the very beginning of the program, so let's do this again for you. Now just 147 days, 8 hours, 6 minutes, and 39 seconds until the first Saturday in May and the Run for the Roses. So there you go. If you've got some Derby fever, that will help intensify that Derby fever. You do have a couple of points races today. You have the Remsen at Aqueduct, and you have the Los Alamitos Futurity, or as I like to call it, the Bob Baffert Invitational out at Los Al. Both of those will see the winner receive 10 points toward a spot in the starting gate on the first Saturday in May, and all eyes certainly going to be on the Baffert trainees in California and Anador, who was runner-up in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile. Only a four-horse field out there at Los Al. A much different scenario where we have 9 horses going to the post in the Remsen. You also have the Demoiselle, which has 12 entrants. That race for the 2-year-old fillies. Never want to neglect the ladies. Don't forget that just because we're 147 days away from the Kentucky Derby means we're 146 days away from the Run for the Lilies and the Kentucky Oaks. And so many 2-year-old fillies going to be trying to punch their ticket over the coming months. Poll question today at HRN on Twitter. So many of you across HRN Nation have taken the time to weigh in on this one. If Maximum Security wins today's Cigar Mile, is he the 3-year-old champion? Yes or no? Pretty simple. And right now, 65% of HRN Nation saying, yeah, he's definitely the 3-year-old champion if he wins that race today. Hard to argue with that logic. He's been really, really good, as you know. And that one incident in the Kentucky Derby may be preventing this question from being a unanimous 100%, but 65% pretty strong. And one trainer who is hoping that Maximum Security does not win the Cigar Mile today is Jeremiah Engelhart. He is with me now here on HRRN. Jeremiah, good morning, my friend.
Good morning, Mike. How you doing?
Good, 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 good. Okay, so let's start there since I brought up the poll question and so many people thinking that Maximum Security, that, you know, he locks up a 3-year-old championship with a victory in that race today. You're coming in with a horse that is a greatest stakes winner in Pat on the Back. We just heard the call coming out of the commercial break. What's your approach as a trainer taking on a horse that figures to be a heavy favorite like Maximum Security?
Well, I mean, I can only control what my horse is, you know, going to do. Obviously, it's a real nice field today in the Cigar Mile. So, you know, I'm just going to ask him to run his race, and hopefully it's good enough.
People might not realize that Jeremiah Engelhart has saddled nearly 1,600 winners in your career. This winning big races is nothing new to you. You have several graded stakes victories to your credit. When you get ready to bring a horse like Pat on the Back up to a big race like this, you did it successfully for the Kelso 2 starts back. What do you do to get him ready to peak at this moment?
Well, I think sometimes it also depends on the start before. Like, you know, coming in the Empire Classic, you know, it's a little bit of a disappointment because we figured that was a race that he could win. Obviously, Mr. Buff ran a heck of a race that day, and we felt like we didn't run our race. You know, maybe running them back a little too quick. So, you know, the Cigar Mile always ends up being our goal at the end of the year just because of the timing of it and, you know, where it is and, you know, as far as him getting the winter off and a little bit of a break. But, the Kelso was – we ended up running in the Kelso because of some issues that we had during the summer. So we changed plans a little bit. And that might have hurt him going into the Empire Classic as far as the rest in between races. But, you know, you try to plan, you know, like you said, if you have a race like the Cigar Mile, you kind of make a plan backwards from there. Sometimes it goes to plan. Sometimes it doesn't.
He was fifth in this race a year ago. Is he a better horse today than he was coming into the race last year?
I want to say yes. You know, last year it seemed like there was, you know, the track changed tremendously last year from one race, like I think it was about the sixth or seventh race, and it got real speed favoring late in the day. I think it went from a back rake racetrack to a Harrod racetrack at some point, and it just seemed like the track really changed, and we ended up being the horse chasing the speed, which I didn't know if that's where we really wanted to be. But, you know, I feel like he's coming into this race really well. I've had Dylan on him twice for his works coming in, and, you know, he thinks he's as good now as he's ever been. So hopefully he runs the way I think he can.
Well, the race before the Cigar Mile, we'll just work backwards here since we started with the Grade 1. We'll go to the Grade 3 Remsen. You'll send out number 3, Cleon Jones, another New York bred, son of Tail of the Cat. Tell me about him and why you think he fits in this spot.
Well, Cleon's a horse that we always thought would get better with distance. It wasn't our first option where we were going to go. We were thinking about maybe the Springboard Mile at Remington, kind of the same path that Steve Asmussen took Bankett on last year. But we changed when we thought there was going to be some other competition out there. So we said, well, let's stay here and run in the Remsen. And I had changed plans with Three Technique as well, so I didn't have a horse for the Remsen. And, you know, I talked with Al, and, you know, he was more comfortable staying local, and so was I. So we decided to give this race a try. You know, first time around, two turns. I've always thought he'd be a two-turn horse, or at least a distance horse. And he's just a horse that seems like he always runs to his competition. You know, he hasn't done anything extravagant, like, you know, like Independence Hall winning his last race. But he's a horse that he's blue collar. He's gonna grind it out and hopefully get it done.
What things, when you look at Cleon Jones, make you think that he is going to be better as a two turn horse?
Mainly the way he trains in the morning. You know, when he finishes his gallops, he seems like he's just as strong, if not stronger, than when he starts. He's never seems like he gets tired. You know, and his first race was such a head scratcher for me, but maybe it was just too short for him because he was training so well as a 2-year-old, and he just has that look too. Like, he's got that classic look to him. He's a strong horse, yet he's very athletic looking.
Did you pick him out at the sale?
Yeah, Travis Durr and I picked him out for Al Gold at I think it was the OBS April sale, maybe,
yeah,
from Eddie Woods.
Yeah, did he give you that same vibe when you first saw him?
Yeah, he was just, you know, a lot of those times when those horses you chase, you see him that first time, and that's when you know that's the one you want. And, you know, we always go back and look at the horses two or three times, but sometimes it's that first initial look, and with him it was that second and third look too. It was a horse you knew you wanted.
Talking with trainer Jeremiah Engelhart here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Jeremiah, earlier in the show, I may have actually mentioned it twice, I said that you had a horse entered in each of the four graded stakes at Aqueduct today. That's not true. You have four horses that will compete in three of the four graded stakes. And I looked very quickly at the Go for Wand, which you do not have a horse in. And number one, Needs Supervision, is trained by Jeremiah O'Dwyer, not Jeremiah Engelhart. Big difference.
Yeah, I actually know Jeremiah pretty well. we had the same first name, and it's actually strange even saying good morning, Jeremiah, because I don't usually get to say that very often to too many people.
Yeah, I caught myself on that one. I said, wait a minute, that's not Jeremiah Engelhart's horse. But you do have two in the Demoiselle, which is going to be race number 8. You'll send out Critical Value, who is number 6, and Daphne Moon. I guess maybe the name a play on the character in Frasier. Am I right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Al, who I think is tremendous with the horse's names, he always comes up with really clever names, and that's one of the characters from Frasier.
Yeah, now this is a daughter of Airdrie Stallion Cairo Prince, and Daphne Moon won her debut, came back in the Frisette, was 5th that day at odds of 3-1. Look back on that performance for a minute.
You know, to me, that race was still pretty much a head-scratcher for me. I was really confident in her going into the race. I really couldn't find anything coming out other than, you know, the stumble bothered her enough where, you know, she had marked up her left ankle from, you know, scraping it on the ground. So I just feel like the stumble might have been enough that day just to kind of throw her off her game. You know, she's coming into this race very well. And, you know, she has that classic, you know, look to her too. And hopefully she'll thrive at the mile and eighth two-turn distance.
All right. And how about your other filly, number six, Critical Value?
Another one that, you know, doesn't seem like distance has any distance limitations. She's one of those fillies that just likes to run. You know, it's fun to watch her load in the starting gate for her races because she shows up every time. In her last race when she won Maid of the Mist, I didn't think she was going to look like around the turn she was going to run last, but she's always just, you ask her and she'll go.
Well, you're hoping all four horses go and go well later today. And Jeremiah, I know it's a busy day, so I won't keep you, but really appreciate the visit. Like all of our guests who appear on the program, we're going to send you a gift courtesy of Embrace the Race, the apparel for the horse racing lifestyle, and all the best later today at Aqueduct.
Thanks a lot, Mike. Best luck to you, too.
Thanks for taking the time. Jeremiah Englehart here on HRRN. And again, those four contenders in three graded stakes later today. Time now for your monthly Kentucky Bred Spotlight segment here on the network. And just want to remind you that Kentucky is the best place to breed, sell, train, and race with record prices at public auction, purse money in the state at an all-time high. Yeah, don't forget about that. A strong year-round racing circuit, a lucrative Kentucky Thoroughbred Breeders Incentive Fund Awards Program, the Kentucky Thoroughbred Development Fund, which has purse supplements in designated races, and state-of-the-art training centers accompanied by world-class breeding operations. You should definitely breed, sell, train, and race here in the Bluegrass state of Kentucky. For more information on basing your thoroughbred business in the Bluegrass, visit KentuckyBred.org or khrc.ky.gov. And I'm back to wrap this one up right after this on the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, your home for racing's biggest events.
Multiple Grade 1 winning millionaire, World of Trouble.
World of Trouble and Manny Franco win the Jiper.
World of Trouble takes the Carter.
One of the fastest horses of his generation, the son of Cantharos captured both the Grade 1 Carter on dirt and Grade 1 Jiper on turf this year and would go on to record 100-plus buyer speed figures in his last seven starts, including a 118 buyer as a three-year-old, the highest three-year-old buyer speed figure of 2018. World of Trouble, standing at Hillendale.
When it comes to buying tractors, mowers, and farm equipment, look no further than locally owned Central Equipment on Red Mile Road in Lexington. A third-generation family business, Central Equipment has been servicing the equine industry for more than 46 years, working closely with the NTRA to ensure their equine clients get the best pricing on their new John Deere purchases. At Central Equipment, you'll find top brands like Exmark, Kubota, Still, John Deere, and Woods. Stop in today and experience the family-owned atmosphere or visit centralequipment.com.
Whether at home, at the track, or on the go, ExpressBet is your way to play the races. ExpressBet provides legal and secure online and mobile betting on more than 300 of the world's top tracks and all the big events. And when you sign up for an ExpressBet account today with promo code HRRN, that's HRRN, you'll receive a $125 bonus. Once you've signed up, you can take your wagering experience to the next level with XB Rewards, ExpressBet's industry-leading loyalty program. Earn points for every bet you make and cash them in on everything from wagering credits to exclusive racetrack experiences. So what are you waiting for? Sign up for ExpressBet today using promo code HRRN. That's HRRN to get your $125 bonus.
Conditions apply. Must be 18 or older and 21 in certain states to open an account with ExpressBet LLC and reside in a state where such activity is legal. Void where prohibited. National Gambling Support Line 800-522-4700.
Power. Character on the Edmond.
Passion.
It's Caraconti winning by a barren neck or so.
Performance.
Caraconti and O'Donnell! Caraconti!
Gainsway Stallion Caraconti, a three-time Grade 1 winner, including a scintillating win in the Breeders' Cup Mile in 132 and 4/5, recording a 114 buyer speed figure. From the Totney Arcos female family, his third dam is the hugely influential champion, Miesque.
Cara Conti was a precocious Group 1 winner as a 2-year-old and has already sired 3 First Crop Stakes winners and 2 additional Stakes Place 2-year-olds, including Kenzai Warrior, the Group 3 winner, remains undefeated in 3 starts in England. And Cara Conti has commercial appeal, with 2-year-olds having sold to major stables for $150,000, $365,000, and $460,000. Cara Conti has the performance, pedigree, and physical, and stands value priced at $10,000 at Gainesway.
This is Al Stahl, and you're listening to Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by Red Brand Fence.
Perfect timing with that Gainesway commercial in the last break, talking about Cara Conti. Had another winner yesterday in Ireland. In the present, won in impressive fashion, won by 4 lengths, made all the running and just drew off. Cara Conti standing over at Gainesway. My thanks to all of our guests for joining me this morning on what was a very busy show. We kicked it off with the Big A, Anthony Stabile. DG Van Cleef joined me in the first half of the program as well. Steve Renfley, president of the Iowa Thoroughbred Breeders Association, was here. Kieran McLaughlin, his interview from yesterday, and Jeremiah Engelhart just a short time ago. Don't forget, if you missed any portion, head to our website, horseracingradio.net, and check out the podcast. And make sure you join us starting on Wednesday with Red Brand Radio, 3 o'clock Eastern here on the network. Now for my producer, Lee Delapina, for Chauncey, handling all of our social media, I'm Mike Penna. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you next week here on the Equine Forum, presented by Red Brand. Go Steelers!